Leitung. Okay, has everybody delivered the assignment? Any questions about that? Do you think you all passed? Yeah. Hopefully. Okay. Yeah, remember, like, whenever you get the feedback, if you haven't, you just submit again, because we don't want to fail anyone. Or I don't want to fail anyone. Too much hassle. And so last class I started with the relational model, right? Like all the boring theoretical stuff that I had to go through. I'm sure everybody remembers everything I talked about last lecture. Hopefully, like, some concepts stayed at least. But this is a closer representation to what you're actually going to end up with in the database, right? And that's why this is important, because before you, like, start going and hacking away and just writing up whatever your database is going to be in SQL, it's good to, like, just plan a bit beforehand. And that's where the relational model comes into place, because it's pretty close to what you're going to end up in the database, as the database structure. So we went over all these things, so integrity and all the key stuff. Any questions about that? Anything that didn't make any sense? Anything that needs recap? Or can I just move along? I'll move along then. So I was around here, I think. So I'll just start talking. So we've seen all these operations, right? When we did, or briefly, but when we had those new commands after all the selects, which were like the inserts and deletes and updates and stuff, right? So an important thing to know about these operations, we've also seen it before, but now in a more like theoretical context. Whenever these operations are done, They need to maintain the integrity of the constraints that have been set for the database, which means, you know, data type values, null restraints, foreign key constraints, all that stuff. And what happens if any of those operations don't follow the integrity constraints that were set when we've defined how the database is going to be? There's like a few approaches that the database system has to handle this type of stuff. Usually, like, the most common one is to just reject it, right? Like, you're trying to insert some data that shouldn't be there, that it's not valid, not allowed. The database server or the database system is just going to be like, oh, nope, this is bad. You can't do this. And then it will just reject it. It can also perform the operation and inform the user, which is bad. It should never happen like that. It can trigger some update actions. So say, for example, if we're updating a row in a database to change their ID, we can specify that whatever refers to that row, it should be updated as well when the row it's referencing gets updated. Or say, for example, we have a row in a table, and then there's a foreign key that refers to that row. If the original row gets deleted, like, the database can either handle that as, okay, if that is gone, whatever depends on it is also gone, so delete everything, which means we cascade the operation. We can restrict, which is, okay, there's some stuff that depends on a value that exists, so you can't delete that until all the references to that row are handled, right? Or we have a set null option, which is, you know, if anything refers to that row, whatever the foreign key field is that refers to that row should just be set to null, and then we keep on going. All of this will be important when we're creating tables, because these are all options that we can set for foreign keys, for example, of a way of handling all these integrity violations. Or you can also execute a user specified error correction routine, which is a bit advanced, and you probably won't. We're not going to learn that here. So if we're inserting a row into the database, one of these violations might occur. So a domain constraint, so if any of the values that we're inserting that doesn't match whatever type we've specified for the column, then that's a violation. If it's a key constraint, so if the key already exists, say we're like trying to insert something with an ID of 3, but the ID 3 already exists, then there's an error. Referential integrity, so this is if we're specifying a foreign key for an ID, and in that other table that doesn't exist, that also raises an error. And if like the primary key is also null, then that's, yeah, you can't be null, so that's also an issue. To delete, we have these three. It's mostly regarding references that causes all the errors. So if we're deleting something that is referenced by something else, then we need to either restrict, reject the operation, cascade, so propagate all these changes to everything that depends on the row, or set to null. And then update might violate the domain constraint and not null. Any other constraints may also be violated depending on the attribute being updated. So for updating a primary key, similar to delete, either a cascade or restrict or set to null, and yeah, all that stuff. So the summary for all this relational model stuff, like all the definitions, these are all like stuff that you're going to go back and look at the slides again to remember all the terms. But you'll remember them as we do more exercises and we do more stuff. All this will set in, hopefully by the exam. And then, yeah, all the constraints and keys and, yeah, all this stuff. Any questions about this? Now that you see it all in one place? No? Okay. In-class exercise. So draw a relational schema diagram, specifying the foreign keys for this schema. So consider dollar relations for a database that keeps track of student enrollment and courses and the books adopted for each course. The student, social security number, name, blah, 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 course, enroll, book adoption, and text. So you can see like this is the, like a normal representation of a relational model. So we specified the entities in all caps in the beginning. Those are going to be, you know, the entities in your diagram or the tables in your database. And then we have all the different attributes that are associated with those entities. And underlined is the primary key. So for example, for book adoption, we have the course number and the semester. That's what identifies like a book adoption. For the text, we have like the book like number thingy. Relational schema model specifying the foreign keys. And then for exercise two is this thing. So what this exercise asks for is basically, I think, this diagram up here. So it's basically just a way of specifying how do all these entities relate to each other, and just having it a bit more graphical without like the whole complexity of UML or Shens. So you can see in this diagram that we've specified all the entities, which are defined by like a row of the columns that are related to that entity. And then we have the arrows that depict how do they relate to each other. So for example, we have the works on entity refers to the project by the field project number to P number of project, right? So if you take a row of the works on entity, we have for all the arrows, and we have an employee social security number and a project number and the number of hours that are worked on. So the way to solve an exercise like this is you have students, and social security number, name, and major, and birth date. For course, we have the course number, the course name, and the department. For the enrollment, we have the social security number and the course number and semester. Grade. Shit. Book adoption. We have the course number. The semester. ISBN, and then I kind of ran out of space. I'll just do it here. Imagine this is horizontal. Book ISBN and book title and publisher. And author. So you just start by making a bunch of like boxes like this, where you have the entity and then all the columns related to it, and then you go by each of the entities and you try to figure out like how does it relate to something else, right? So for the student, we have social security number and go through everything, doesn't relate to anything. We have the name and the major and the birth date. Well, then for course, we have the course number, course name and department. For enrollment, we have the social security number. Yeah. So you can see for like course, for example, we relate to like an enrollment, right? So the enrollment refers to the course number of the course entity, right? For the social security number of the enrollment, we have that refers to like the social security number of the student, because an enrollment is a relationship between the course and the student plus a couple of more information. For the book adoption, here we have a reference to the course number, and we have the book or whatever number thingy that refers to the text. Did I miss anything? I don't think so. It looks not the best, but whatever. So say, for example, we're deleting a textbook from the database, right? And we have a reference to the books from a book adoption. If a book is deleted, then all the adoptions that relate to that textbook, end up with like a big question mark here, right? Like, oh, how do I figure out what the book is if the book is gone, right? So whenever like this stuff like this happens, where it's like, oh, unsure, something has gone wrong, because it should always, everything in the database should be true and not ambiguous, which means we can either like set the bucket option to null, right? Or the book in bucket option to null, but that doesn't really make any sense because then we have like a bucket option, we have no book. We can cascade, which is, okay, the text book was deleted, so then every bucket option that depends on that book gets deleted too. Which is okay, but it might cause like unintended issues and or might delete like a bunch of stuff from the database. What happens a lot of time as well is, or what a lot of people do, is instead of actually deleting things from the database, they just update. There's a flag that is called deleted for every table that just gets set to one or to true. So we actually keep everything in the database forever, which is useful for example, if we have like websites where users might delete their information and then want it back. A lot of times you can just really be like, oh yeah, well, you deleted it, it's gone, I can't recover it. Most of the times the customer is going to be like, yeah, but I need it back. So then instead of just deleting stuff from the database, you can just set a flag or like a column that is like deleted, and then you filter every query you do, is this row deleted or not, and you don't return any deleted stuff. That has also raised a problem nowadays, though, with the whole like GDPR thing, data protection thing, because if users expect the data to be deleted, and then we actually were still keeping it, but we're just like setting it to like deleted true, that's also not that good, because if there's a data leak and then the user goes and sees like, how was this data leaked? How did you like get my credit card number if I deleted it from the system, right? So it's kind of like, you know, it depends on how sensitive the information is, and it depends on how do you think the needs of the user are, and there's usually like a lawyer or some legal person that you can consult on this to figure out if it's not, if it's okay or not to delete stuff. Or in smaller companies that don't have any like legal person that takes care of this, you just wing it, I guess, and then hope you don't get caught like having stuff in your database that you shouldn't. But if you're working in bigger companies, somebody's thinking of this. And when you're starting to work in the industry, you're probably not going to have to worry about this ever, because there's somebody that's old that takes care of like all the responsibility of this type of stuff. Yeah. Any questions about this? No. So exercise, like the slides are up, so you, like these kind of need the two at the same time. I'll just have this and you can follow the questions in your own computer. So what's this one? So here's a relational model. There's a bunch of constraints there, some foreign keys, some primary keys. And the question is of the next, so the stuff in the next slide, of all the declarations there, what integrity constraints do they violate? There's already that data in the database. It's a shitty way of presenting it, but yeah, we'll see. So question one, or like in operation one, is to insert 10,230 and some dates into sales. So anyone that wants to say what the integrity constraints that are violated by inserting this row is? So for sale, we're inserting these values into sales, and the important value here is the like all the values that are not underlined, right? They usually don't mean anything when it comes to integrity constraints, other than is it the right type or not, right? If we're inserting something that is not a date into a date field, that's a problem. But most of the violations happen in when related to keys, right? So here we are inserting 10 and 230 into a 10 and 200 when there's like already a 10, 825 there. So salesperson ID is the same, but serial number is different. Here we have a composite key, which means it will be rejected if both of the values are the same. One value can be the same if the other one's different, like that's okay to insert, right? Because the identification here is we have a salesperson that sold a car. That's like what defines a sale. It was a salesperson, there was a car, a sale happened, and that's how you identify it. A salesperson sold a car with a specific serial number, that identifies a sale. So a salesperson can sell like multiple different like cars with different serial numbers. That's not really an issue, right? Which means if we're inserting 10 and 230, that's fine, right? There's no issue. Next, if we're, or wait. There is no issue because there's a salesperson, but and there's also a car. Then you check the foreign keys. Like there's a serial number, which is 230. We go and check, is it a car with the ID or with the serial number 230? Yeah, and it's the Toyota Camry there. And then there's a salesperson with that ID, which is Ali, which means both the primary key constraint passes. Like we're inserting something that is different from all the stuff that's already there. All the foreign key constraints pass because like we're inserting stuff that refers to stuff that's already in the database. And here we can't really tell what the variable types are, but that's also okay. Then we're inserting 230 and 10 and whatever into sales. The problem there is 230 refers to the salesperson ID. There's no salesperson with the ID of 230, so this insert is going to fail, right? The 4C, again, we have like 10, 825, both the car and the salesperson exists, but there's already a sale that is registered with both 10 and 825, which is that one, right? Both of the foreign key constraints pass because like all both the things that this row is referring to, the salesperson and the car exist, but the primary key constraint will not pass because there already is a sales a sale with those two values. For D, we're inserting null into stuff that is a primary key. That's not allowed, right? So that will fail. And also, we're inserting the wrong number of arguments, so that will also fail. For deletion, if we're deleting sales that have a salesperson ID of 10, that is fine. That is just going to go through like all the sales. Does it have a salesperson ID that is 10? Yeah, then delete it, right? Because all the foreign keys that are in the sales entity here refer to something else. There's nothing, there's no other entities that depend on sales. So whenever that happens, we can just delete stuff safely without having to think about, is this affecting some other entity or not? But if we're deleting salesperson with salesperson ID 10, then we see that salesperson ID is a foreign key of another table, right? Which means something else depends on the salesperson ID. And if there's any sales that are associated with the salesperson with ID 10, then this will cause a problem, right? We can either cascade and delete all the sales that are associated with that salesperson, but that can be like a bit of an issue. Say if we have an employee that left the company, so we need to delete all the information that that employee has, so we'll delete them from the salesperson table. Should all the records of all the cars that they sold be deleted too? Then like that will not work well with all the finance guys that are going to go through like all the transactions and being like, oh, you sold a lot of cars, but I don't see any sales here. It's like, oh yeah, but the person left. So you need to address this situation in some way that is not just deleting everything. That is why, for the most part, if you're deleting stuff from the database and you have like foreign keys, like the foreign keys are usually set to restrict to prevent a lot of this stuff from happening, from all your data being wiped because you deleted like one row, right? This will prompt the user to go and do something and fix the data before that can be deleted. So like moving all the sales to a different salesperson or creating a new salesperson, which is like a person that left, and then just putting all the sales there. Updating the price attribute of the car tuple with model Z3 to null. So there's a car, and then you find the car with model Z3, which is the BMW there, and then reset the value to null. Depending on how the database is defined, if the column allows for null, this would go through. I would argue that a car should always have a price if it's being sold. So if you're defining this database in SQL, it would probably be like, okay, but the price always has to be defined because we can't sell cars that don't have a price. So in that case, this would fail. And then update the serial number attribute of the car tuple from serial number 825 to 230. So there's a couple of problems here. First, we're updating a field, which is the serial number of the car, to something else. If that happens, everything that depends on that serial number should either be updated or set to null, or nothing should happen, right? When you're doing updates, so when you're specifying foreign keys in a database, you usually have two fields, which is on update, do something, on delete, do something. The most common way to handle these situations is on delete, restrict, so don't allow stuff to be deleted if something else is dependent on it. And for update, we usually do like on update cascade, which means if we change the serial number of the BMW there to like 100, all the sales that refer to that BMW are going to be updated and have the new serial number of the BMW, right? So then it's still possible to go into the sales table and be like, okay, these are like all the BMWs that were sold this past year. Yeah, the serial number of the car changed in that time, but that's fine because all the records have been updated to whatever the new value is. So that isn't really an issue if we have, if we're set the foreign key to behave like that. The other problem here is that we're updating the serial number of the car to something that is already a serial number of another car. So the Toyota Camry already has like 230 as a serial number, so we can't just set any other car to have that same serial number because that should be unique, right? So yeah, any questions? No? Yeah, we can take a break then. Then I'll jump to the next PowerPoint. everybody's back, right? I'll just start. Okay, so the second part of this lesson is how to map all the diagrams that we've made before, being like in Shannon's notation or UML, to a relational model. So you start, you make like a nice little diagram, and then you need to figure out how to create a database from it. How do you go about doing it by like looking at the diagram, right? Like how do you even like create a database from this? There's a bunch of steps to it, and for all the different things that you're going to find in your diagram, so how to map just like plain entities, and then how to map relationships, how to map like ternary relationships or whatever, and then how do you map like specializations and generalizations and stuff to the table paradigm. So these are like a bunch of steps that are like written down in a approachable way where you can just like go step by step and be like, is this a binary relationship is one to one, then I do this and you follow the instructions. Which is okay as you're like doing exercises and stuff, but as you gain more experience and when you're doing these exercises in the exam or whatever, then it's not really feasible to check back on like the step-by-step thing how to do it, because you'll probably run out of time. So it's good to just do some exercises, practice a bit, so you can actually like do this in the reasonable amount of time, as opposed to like spending a whole afternoon converting a diagram. So how do you approach all this stuff? First you start with the entities. So everything that's an entity in the diagram, you just go through all of them. All the attributes become columns. Whatever the key is, whatever the identifier is, becomes a primary key. And then if the key is composite, then the primary key is just going to be multiple columns, right? So for example, we create the relations employee, department, and project, and then from a diagram like this, can't really see that well. But we have the employee there that has a social security number that's faintly underlined there. That becomes the key for, or the primary key for the relation employee. Then we have department, and department has a name and number. So then this is a composite key, which means both the columns number and name become the primary key for the department relation. And then for project, again, both name and number, so those become the primary key. Or if there are multiple, if there are multiple keys for each of the for each of the entities, you need to figure out, are they dependent from each other, or do they complement each other? So here you need to figure out, is like both name and number the same thing, or like are they unique, or is it like the pair of them that is unique, or are they unique individually? because a way of checking this is like, okay, take multiple departments. Can they have the same number? If yes, can they have the same name? And then can they have the same number and name at the same time? In this case, the assumption is each number of the department is unique, so that becomes a primary key. We also have a name there that is also underlined, which means it's a key of department, which means that's also unique, but that becomes a unique column that is not necessarily like the primary key. The primary key is the thing that identifies the row that is the easiest to use, right? Usually that is whatever takes the least amount of space in storage. That's why it's convenient to use just like sequential IDs as the primary key, because just like 1, 2, 3, 4, as opposed to using like a huge ass string that then you have to duplicate everywhere in your database and use more data storage to keep all this stuff. Nowadays, it's not really an issue with the amount of storage because that's super cheap nowadays. But it's still, you know, just because you have the performance doesn't need to, you need to like use all of it. That's why a bunch of software is like really shitty nowadays, because people just do whatever is quickest to develop as opposed to whatever is the most performant. That's why like Pokemon games back in the day would fit in like the small ass cartridge, and nowadays like if you're browsing Chrome with like 5 tabs open, it starts to slow down your computer. Or all the games run like shit in every platform. So yeah, when you're choosing your primary key, just choose whatever is like most convenient. There is, when it comes to the database, just use like the sequential IDs that are given to you. But when you're referencing stuff from like an external perspective, using foreign keys is, or should, or using the primary keys as like the sequential IDs should be discouraged. Say for example, if you're retrieving employees, and this is like a website, right? And if you're in your address bar, you have like yoursite.com, and then you're doing like employees, and then you're using like the sequential IDs that are defined in the database, like 1, 2, 3, 4. That makes it like super easy for people to come into your website and get all of your data using a machine or like a computer, because like the IDs are sequential. So then say if we're retrieving like all of your products, if you have a store, and you can just retrieve it by incrementing the whatever the product ID is. Then if you're a competitor, you can just go in and just be like, oh, here's a list of all the products this store has and their prices and all that information. If you're using non-sequential IDs, then if it's harder to figure out every stuff. But I'm sure somebody will talk about it when you're learning about like APIs and stuff. So back into the lecture. So then mapping of weak entities. These are the entities that are dependent on something else to have an identity, right? So remember Remember, like the pets, for example, where a pet can all is dependent on the owner to be a thing in the veterinarian. Here we have a dependent that has a name. So think, for example, like a child of an employee. We don't need to keep specific IDs of each of the dependents because you never retrieve a dependent on its own. You always retrieve it through whatever the employee that it is related to. In this case, you should create a relation that has both a primary key that refers to whatever that dependent is dependent on, plus whatever the weak identifier of that the relation is. So for example, here we have a dependent, and the dependent has a name. You can see it there, like very small, underlined. So this becomes this. We have an employee that has a primary key, and then we have a dependent, which has whatever employee owns it, I guess, plus their own name as the primary key. So if we're going to identify somebody's child, you take their social security number, and then you take the name of the dependent, right? This way, there can be multiple dependents with the same social security number, which refers to the employee, but each of them needs to have their own name. And likewise, we can have people that have the same name, but they'll all relate to different employees as their dependents, right? So then we have a primary key that is both these values, and then we have the foreign key that refers to the employee where that the dependent depends on, right? Does that make sense? Okay. Now for one-to-one relations or relationships. So for each relationship, identify the relations that are a part of it, and then there's three possible approaches. One of them is to just use a foreign key. So you just take one of the relations, either S or T, and then you just have a foreign key to the other thing that should refer to it. So in the example there, we have a manager is mapped by choosing the participant department, and then we just have like a department that has like the manager as a foreign key to the employee. An alternative mapping is to just merge it. So if we have a one-to-one relationship, that means something on relation A, something on relation B. There's always going to be like a mapping there between the two. The one on the left side is always going to have something on the right side. The one on the right side is always going to have the same on or exactly one on the left side. So then you can just merge both of them and they can just become one single table. The third option is to just create a cross-reference or relationship relation option. So this would you have like a third table that refers to that has foreign keys to both tables, and then you put some constraints in that none of these can appear more than once. Out of all these, like the one that I prefer to use the most times, or the one that's appropriate most times, is to just have a foreign key that refers to something else. This will make it so that you have self-contained relations that have like a specific meaning, right? So say for example here we have the one-to-one relationship that is employee to department. So every department has one manager and each manager has a department. If we're joining both of them, then we end up with a table that has like all the information about the manager plus all the information about the department. And these are like two different concepts, right? One is an employee, the other one is a department. If we're going to have all of the that data in a single table, it might not make much sense of like how where does the department end and where does the manager begin. If you're creating like a third table, then it's just one more table you have to maintain. So then you can just choose like, for example, department. You create a table that is department, and then it has a reference to employee ID, which is the manager, right? That is pretty convenient. So there is, well, that was done. So we have department, and then we have the manager social security number, which is a foreign key to the employee social security number. Yeah. Then we take care of 1 to N relationships. These are the relationships that have one thing on one side and then a bunch of other things on the other side. The example there is works for. Department. Wait. What is works for? Works for is a bunch of employees work at one department, right? So we have one department. No. One. Shit. Garbage. One department. Then we have like, fuck me. Then we have like multiple employees. So each employee is going to have like one department that they're related to, and the department is going to have all these different employees. The easiest way to map these type of relationships is to take the side that is N. So take the side that has that all of them relate to one single thing, and then add a foreign key to that single thing everywhere. So for employees, we take all the employees, and for each of the employees, there's only one department that relates to that specific employee, right? So that's fairly easy to just add as a foreign key. So you go to employee, you add the foreign key to department, and then it's quite easy for a department or for an employee to figure out what the department they're in is. So that's what was done here. So up there, we have employee that has a department number, and that department number refers to department. That means if there's a bunch of different rows in the table employee, they can refer to the same department. That's not an issue. We can have like 10 different employees that have the same department number. They all work for the same department. But we also enforce that one employee can only work for one department, right? If a row is an employee, there's only like one foreign key that refers to department, and then you have like a one-to-many relationship, if that makes sense. Yeah? Then we have like the many-to-many relationship. This is if we have multiple things that relate to multiple things, you can't just really have a foreign key in that case because it's unknown, like the number of things each of it is going to relate to each other, right? You can't just be like, oh, I'm a, let's say department. I'm a department and I refer to 100 employees. You're not going to create like 100 different columns that so you can hold all the foreign keys for each of the employees that belong to the department. And then if like that number is variable, like how can you enforce or how can you know how many columns you're going to need to hold all those foreign keys to the employee? So the best way to map like a many-to-many relationship is to just have like a third table or a third relation. And then you just have foreign keys to the other two tables that are in the relationship. So take, for example, the works on relation. We have one table that has like the social security number of the employee. And then we have one column that refers to the project, and then we have the number of hours that that person works for that project. So if you see in the diagram, it's this little bit here. So we have employee that has like an M2N relationship to project that is works on, and then we have an attribute, right? What we want here is a project to allow for multiple employees to work on it and an employee to be able to work on multiple projects and also keep track of all the hours that they use when they're working on something. By doing this, we have a foreign key, so we have a reference to employee, we have a reference to the project, and we have the number of hours that that employee worked for that project. And then we also have a primary key that is both of them, which means there can be in like no repeat rows, right? One row refers to that relationship of employee plus the project. There can't be like multiple rows that have like the same employee and the same project. It's only one. So if we want to add hours of like an employee working for one project, that row gets updated instead of adding a new one, right? And then mapping of multi-valued attributes. So for each of the multiple multi-valued attributes, create a new relation. The relation will include an attribute corresponding to A plus the primary key, K as a foreign key. And then primary key is a combination of A and K. So the example for this is we have the department locations. So here we have, where is it? Departments. And we have locations, right? So the department can have multiple locations. This would be like an array if it was like a normal programming language. But we can't really have multiple values in the same column. Again, we don't really know how many locations there are going to be for one department. They can be variable, so we can't really like add a bunch of different columns of like location one, location two, location three, because it never needs to be like a discrete number of locations. So the way to do it is we have a department, And then we create another table, which is department locations. Here we have a foreign key to the department number, which means for one department, we can have multiple locations. And then we have a primary key that is both the location plus the department number, right? Does that make sense? Okay. And in area relationships, so every time we have more than two things on as like a relationship, it's the same with like the M2N relationship. We just need to create another table. So take this as an example. We have a supplier, and the supply is the relationship between the supplier, the project, and the part, right? So those three are independent entities, and they all participate in the same relationship. And attached to the supply, we also have the quantity. To map this relationship to the relational model, you have those three entities. So supplier has a name, project has a name, and part has a number. And then we have the third table, or the third relation, that is called supply, that has foreign keys to all these three ones that participate in the relationship. Plus we have the column quantity, which is the attribute of that relationship. Yeah. So yeah, here's a summary. So an entity type becomes a relation. One-to-one or a one-to-n become a foreign key. An M2N or a multiple binary relationship just become another table. An attribute becomes a trun attribute. A composite attribute becomes a set of single component attributes. A multi-valued attribute becomes a new relation plus a foreign key. Valence value set is a domain, and then the key attribute is the primary key or secondary key. Yeah, any questions? No? Okay. So for all the concepts from the EER model, which is basically just like specialization and generalization, there's a few different approaches we can take. This is all very heavy notation, but I'll try to simplify it. You can take some time at home to like try to interpret what the hell this is. I understand this notation, but it's also like take some time to like actually read through it and try to understand what is there. I don't know if any of you like have had stuff like this. Maybe if you remember from like math and like high school or something. Like this type of like mathematical notation. Yeah. We could create the relation L for C with attributes, and then you have the attributes of the relation, right? And then it's K, and then A1, A2, whatever. And then primary key of L is K, and then create the relation Li for each subclass. So subclass SI, where I is between 1 and M, where M is the number of or subclasses, right? And then each of the attributes, we have both K union with all the attributes of SI. Does that make sense? So what this basically says is you have a relation, right? And then it has a bunch of attributes and a primary key, which is K. And then for all of these subclass relationships, you take all their attributes, which is what attributes of SI is, plus the primary key for the superclass. So if we have an employee which has secretary and technician and engineer as subclasses, it just becomes this, which makes a bit more sense than all that mathematical notation, I think, if you see it visually. So we have the superclass, which has like all these attributes, which is like first name, whatever. And then it has like the social security number, which is the primary key. And then for all these subclasses, we have like the foreign key to the superclass, which is employee, plus whatever attributes they have, right? We don't need. What we're doing here is that a technician refers to a specific employee. So if we're retrieving like all technicians plus their like attributes, we can fetch like technicians and then join with employees and then get everything, right? The downside of this approach is that you could, in theory, insert the same employee into two different of the subtables, right? So then you can either like put some constraints in place to prevent that from happening in like a more complex way, or you can just design your relation in a different way if this is like really something you want to avoid. The other option is to, so this would what the relationship would be. So you have foreign key and primary key, and they both have like all their attributes, and then they relate to an employee. They can just become, or you can just duplicate all the attributes from the superclass. So you have two tables that have all the same attributes. So vehicle ID, price, and license plate number, they all belong to vehicle, but like the vehicle concept is kind of like thrown away, and you just duplicate all those things, and then you have the other attributes that refer to both individually, like car and truck, right? So you can see here, vehicle just goes away. And then it just becomes like car and truck. So another option is to have a single relation and then a type attribute. So here you can have an employee, and it has a job type. So job type becomes an attribute of employee. So here we can either have like secretary, engineer, or technician, and then the additional attributes of those more specialized classes of like typing speed, T grade, they just become more attributes of employee. So the concept of the subclasses kind of like goes away, and they all get merged into the same like relation. The other option is to have a single relation with multiple type attributes. So here we have part-time employee and full-time employee. And then we have part-time flag or a purchase flag or a manufacturing flag. So we have, they just become Booleans instead of having a field where job type can be either secretary, technician, or engineer. We have some flag fields that are, is this a manufactured part or is this a purchased part? And they're both Boolean. So M flag can be true, but then P flag is false, and the other way around. And then we have like all the attributes from each of those subclasses as well. So we just, again, merge everything into one, but instead of just having one singular field where we have all of the different attributes, we use like just Boolean flags instead. So then we can see here that we have, if it's a manufactured part, if it's not, like all those fields have to be null. If it's a purchased part, all those fields will be defined, and then all the other fields are going to be null instead. So a shared subclass such as like student assistant is a subclass of several classes indicating multiple inheritance. These classes must have all of the same key attributes, otherwise the shared subclass would be modeled as a category. We can apply any of the options discussed in step 8 to a shared subclass subject to the restriction. So for a student assistant, we could just have like a TA flag is the employee, a TA, and then for the student, we would also have like, is it a student assistant, and then just have some attributes related to that. Did some of this stuff make sense, or you kind of lost a bit? That's understandable. But we have the case studies here, or one case study. I think everybody's just kind of tired, so we can move on. But you can look at the case study at home and bring some questions to more. If there's anything that doesn't make sense or that you want to discuss. So just look at this diagram and try to convert it yourselves into a relational model diagram, and then try to check if you've arrived at the same result as the slides. A good idea is to just break it down into steps and do it like one small location of the diagram at a time, instead of just looking at all of it at the same time and then just getting lost. I guess that's it.